Hey, this is Cam.
This is Jess.
And this is Mark. And you're listening to Walk the Floor with Midland.
Woo!
Walking the floor.
Walking.
Close enough. Close enough.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, señores and señoritas. This is Chris Shiflett, and yes, people, you are listening to another fine edition of Walking the Floor. This is day 8,097.34 of the coronavirus lockdown. Have you lost your mind yet? Are you protesting for your local government to reopen the economy? God, I hope not. Stay safe out there. Wash your hands. Keep your distance. You know what to do. Come on. I don't know about y'all, but I've been doing a lot of podcasting, a lot of remote interviewing. I've been doing some songwriting. Been doing some homeschooling with the kiddos. I was so bored the other day, I even cleaned out my bathroom drawer. Like, not all the bathroom drawers, because most of them are taken up by my wife's stuff, and I wouldn't dream of trying to organize her lotions and creams and makeup and whatnot, because I'd get in big trouble if I tried to do that. But I did organize my drawer, and it was filled with crazy bullshit, just like everybody's bathroom door. But I'm getting organized, getting it together. I swear, in this new digital realm, it's like busier than a solo tour schedule or something. Check out what I got coming up in the world of live streams. Now, this is going up on Monday. So on Monday, after you listen to this, make sure you tune in to, I'm going to take over Bose's Instagram live stream feed and do a little thing over there. Then on the 29th, I'm going to be a guest on Brian Fallon from Gaslight Anthem's Songwriter in the Round live stream thing that he's doing. And on the 30th, I'm going to take over Vox's socials and do like an Instagram live stream. I think it's Instagram, whatever. Just check Vox's social media outlets, and I'm sure that you'll be able to figure it out. So I'm going to do a live stream through Vox. On May 1st, I'm going to do a live stream set with the Beach Life Festival. Beach Life was a festival that I was supposed to play, you know, that weekend. And like everything else, it had to get canceled or rescheduled or whatever. So they're doing some live streams. It's like Jim from Pennywise, Trevor from Face to Face, me, but, you know, a bunch of folks. It's going to be great. So tune in for that. Then here comes the big one. And, you know, I don't even think any of this stuff is exactly announced yet, but who cares? Because this is live stream world, and it doesn't work the same because there's no tickets to buy. So I'm going to let you know, on May 3rd, I'm going to host. Luck Reunion is doing this cool live stream show, I think in partnership with Amazon or something, called Hello Walls. And I'm going to host it. And I have corralled an insane guest list of folks that are going to jump in on that. It's going to be really, really good. May 3rd, I think it starts at like 6 o'clock on the West Coast, 8 o'clock Central Time. Just check my social media or check Luck Reunions in the coming, you know, week or whatever, and, you know, I'll give you some details. And also, the day after that, May 4th, you know, Martin Guitars, beautiful acoustic guitars. I own some Martin Guitars. They do a series called Jam in Place. And I'm going to do one of those and probably talk about my acoustic guitar stuff. You know, been doing a lot of that lately. So that's what's going on. A whole lot of live streaming. So tune in. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to have to learn a lot of new songs so I don't just do the same dang thing live stream after live stream. Because I'm starting to get bored with myself with these live streams. I got to learn some new songs, man. It's good for me. All right, let's pay some bills. Zounds.com. You know Zounds.com. Did you know that when you order things from Zounds.com, even crazy heavy items like tube amps and 8x10 speakers, giant synth boards, whatever, all the hardware and larger format mixing consoles, they all ship free. They ship the big stuff free. And they also have three or four warehouses strategically located all over the United States to get you your gear faster than anybody else. Sounds.com. Get over there. I know you need something during the lockdown. Whew. All right, let's get to today's interview.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just the other week, I had the great pleasure of sitting down remotely with my new pals, Mark, Jess, and Cam from the band Midland. You love Midland. Great band, lots of hits. Drinking Problem, 14 Gears, you know Midland. Based out of Texas. Given the fact that these are the early days of remote interviews, and I'm still getting used to this whole Zoom interview thing, it's funny to listen back to it, because I apparently felt the need to just shout all my questions at them. I'm basically shouting through this whole interview, because maybe I couldn't hear myself, or I don't even remember why, but I just kind of giggled to myself when I listened back to this, because it just sounds like I'm yelling at the band Midland. You know, these interviews are especially dependent on your Wi-Fi connection, and we had kind of a glitchy, janky Wi-Fi connection, especially Mark the singer, because he was out in the middle of nowhere, out in the country somewhere. But we got it done, and it was great, and they were great. And I was already a fan, but I'm a bigger fan now that I know that Jess and Cam both spent time living in my hometown of Santa Barbara. So anybody that lived in Santa Barbara, I just like just a little bit more. All right, if you ever meet these guys, make sure you ask them where you can get a good deal on a rental hawk. This is Midland on Walking the Floor.
Maybe I'm jealous with you, babe. If you saw the way she ain't lurking at me, she's bringing back.
I want you fellas to know that I even took a shower today, which is, you know, in these current lockdown times, that's kind of saying a lot.
I know people, actually, no, I know one person who gets completely dressed up during the day just to sit around.
Really?
Because of the mental state, yeah.
You know, it makes sense. I say that to my kids usually about like 2 or 3 in the afternoon when I realize that my whole family is still in pajamas and nobody's brushed their teeth. You know, I'm like, can we just be a little civilized here? Come on.
I will wear 3 to 4 different.
Sorry about that, guys. Did you hear me yelling at my dog's name over?
No, we were just having a conversation until you completely ruined it. Make sure
you messed the whole thing with the brown eagles flying around here.
So I would have brown eagle get
like
your dog.
Two American eagles with like whatever they are. They're like 6.5 foot wingspans, fly right, just buzz right by us. And I had both Juice and Pony out here.
Okay, for people listening to just the audio, since we're just going to jump in here, can you guys introduce yourselves, like just give your name, and just so people can differentiate between who's answering what?
Yeah. Hey, it's Cam. This is Cam's voice.
Hey, this is Jess. And real quick, is anybody else getting like freezing up of the screen, or is that just me? I think I might have a bad connection.
I think it seems from my end, it seems like we keep getting a little jittery on Mark's audio, which is just a you know, it's
as long as we can hear each other, this is just a normal phone call, guys.
Exactly.
Proceed as if you're talking on the phone.
This is Mark talking. Chris, I'm out in the middle of the country, so
nice
reception. There's one tiny little corner of the house that gets AT&T reception over here. So,
oh, nice.
And I'm in it. I'm at the very farthest edge of our reach out here. So, hopefully,
deep into your quarantine.
To really isolate from all society.
Yeah,
Mark,
good.
Your connection is absolute garbage.
Well, we got to cut Mark some slack, because he's the one deepest into the deep dark lockdown quarantine situation.
No, I don't know. We're all in the country, dude.
Oh,
we're
really? Okay. Okay.
No.
Well, then get some proper fucking Wi-Fi laid out there, Mark. Come on, man. Let's start with the fact that you guys, like, in what has to be like one of the most perfectly timed and well executed sort of pop culture, you know, what's happening in the world, lockdown and tech combination. I wanted to start with your guys' cover of that Joe Exotic song. I mean, that is like, perfectly executed of the moment. It just like kind of perfectly encapsulates everything that we're all going through, because, you know, obviously we're all locked up, and I think everybody on earth has watched that show. So first thing I wanted to ask was, with when you're covering an artist with such a deep, rich catalog of songs, how did you settle on I Saw a Tiger?
It wasn't easy to settle on I Saw a Tiger. There was a, it's a grab bag of hits. You know, I really love my first love. I think that that's also a smash hit. I Saw a Tiger has tempo. It's got the word tiger in it. So I think just from a headline perspective, it was more clickbait than anything.
Oh, perfect.
I will say for me personally, no show that I've ever watched left such a hole in its absence once I finished it than Tiger King. I mean, I just was literally like sent into this, like, I haven't been able to bounce back. Yeah.
Seriously, it's like it really, I mean, the twists and turns in that show, it was like not at all what I expected it to be. I think the last show that I watched that kind of did that a similar thing for me was, there was that show a couple years ago called Wild Wild Country on Netflix, and I saw the title, you know, and I was like looking through something to watch, and I went, Wild Wild Country, what's it about, some honky tonk or something, what is it? And I, you know, clicked on that, like, what the fuck?
That was that cult with the business cult up in Oregon where everybody just grew up not too far from there, right?
That's where I'm from, dude. So that
really
stuff, I have personal connections to all that. My aunt went out there to that cult because that's the type of person she is. She likes that kind of stuff and went out there and apparently visited them.
What kind of stuff?
Don't hold back. I want details.
I knew people that saw, I think even my dad saw the procession of Rolls Royces driving by and all that. You know, it was
shit.
Yeah, it was a big deal. And, you know, Oregon, you know, is a pretty quiet state. There's not a lot that goes on there. So when that was going on, that was like, you know, front headline news.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because watching that show, I was like, how did I never hear this? I was alive. Like, I wasn't that old when that was happening. It was, what, the early 80s or something. But I was, you know, I grew up in California, not too far away. I guess it's a sign of the times of how, like, you know.
Where are you
sort
from?
Of disconnected. I'm from Santa Barbara, California.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's where I grew up.
Cam and I both have lived in Santa Barbara. We didn't overlap there, but
really?
We both lived in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, do tell. What brought you to Santa Barbara?
I mean, I was pretending to go to school.
Oh, did you go to UCSB?
No, I was pretending to go to Goleta. I was pretending to go to City College. I had very low expectations, as did my family for myself.
It's funny because Santa Barbara, the nickname that we have for Santa Barbara is, it's the land that ambition forgot. And that is sort of, that is the stereotype of the native Santa Barbara. And like, you run into somebody 30 years after high school and you're like, what's going on? They're like, oh, just living at my parents' house, taking a couple of classes up at City College.
Honestly,
slot right in.
Why leave? Because it's like the greatest and most beautiful part of California. That and like Inverness in the North Bay, I think are some of the most beautiful places in America. So yeah, I get lazy enough to never leave.
Yeah, it's funny. I hated, I can't say I hated it. When I was a kid, all I wanted to do was leave. And then the minute I left, I was like, what? Why'd I leave? I'll go back.
It's not all like Santa Barbara.
Once I heard there was a City College on the beach, I was like, yep, I'm sold. So.
Oh, were you a City College alum as well?
Well, I had a friend. I grew up in a small town in Oregon, and I had a friend that got into UCSB.
You lived at the beach? You didn't live in Isla Vista?
No. So I came down. I couldn't get into UCSB, but, you know, he told me that there was a City College like right on the beach. And I was like, yeah, I'll move down there and just go to the City College. But I lived in IV. I lived on DP.
Oh.
6600 block.
No shit. Okay, so there's a little backstory.
6600 block.
When we were kids, when we were like in high school, you would go out to Isla Vista basically all weekend long. And the hot spots were DP and Trigo. You just walk up and down Del Playa and Trigo and look for keg parties. And that was your weekend.
It's not much has changed. I mean, at least since
probably partied together.
We could have. Could have. Hey, back to the Joe Exotic thing. How did you guys do that? Because when I saw that, my first thought was, okay, A, are you recording that live? And if so, how is there no like latency issue? Or did you do it all separate? Like, and I'll tell you, the reason I'm asking is because I've been doing some of those Instagram live streams and I've tried to bring guests in and there's a crazy like 3 second latency on it where you can't really play together. You know, it's all janky. So how did you guys do that?
There's an app called Acapella that we used. So it's kind of confusing, but it's like, it's almost like if you shared a, like an 8-track machine and you sent it in the mail to each other and you build the tracks one at a time and the work file digitally is only as good as the last person who has recorded on it. So like there was an issue in, you know, I think that there's 7 of us in the band and when you send the link work file to everybody, like everyone jumps on and tries to record, but there's an issue with, it's not saving in a interesting real time way. It's actually kind of hard to get to use. There was definitely a learning curve for us old guys using it. We're no spring chickens. We're all 25 years old, believe it or not. We're not very young anymore. So we had to figure out how to.
You've aged out of rock and roll, my friend.
Yeah, we aged right into country.
Okay, here's my last Joe Exotic question. When I was watching the show and I was listening to, you know, it would cut to those like videos that he had made. His normal speaking voice is like this, like really, you know, it's kind of nasally, thin, little wispy voice. But then his vocals on his songs are like these like rich, like beautiful, you know.
That's the
he's not singing that shit, is he? Did he Milli Vanilli that shit?
Yeah.
Supposedly that's not him. I mean, this is, I'm going off stuff that I've read, but yeah, supposedly that's not him singing it.
It can't be, right?
No, it's not supposed. It's been proven. It's two guys out of I think Oklahoma City or Tulsa that he kind of gave them the content. You know, there was just like hiring somebody to write a ditty for you. And these guys just wrote the songs and cut the whole thing. And then he actually tried to spell people that, that it was him singing and performing. And it was kind of a line about the whole thing.
Who cares? Part of why it's rad is that it's not him.
Well, nobody cares per se, but these guys, I'm curious to how many people are kind of knocking on these guys' door now as songwriters,
right.
Because to be honest with you, the songs are, if somebody came to you and said, "Hey man, I want to write a song about this bitch, Carole Baskin, you know, and it involves tigers, murder, and, you know."
You're talking about your kitty, kitty?
You're like, well, your kitty, kitty. I mean, what the fuck? And those guys, as far as I guess, meeting the expectations, they kind of blew them outside of the fucking, blew the walls out of it. I mean, they knocked it out of the park.
It's going to be pretty funny when he gets out of prison and he comes to sing that song on stage with you guys when people hear his actual voice.
That's going to happen.
Kanye West and Kim Kardashian are working hard to get him freed right now.
Good. Thank
you. Taking up the important issues as usual.
Hey, I think we covered this before the interview started. So where are you guys currently locked down? Where are you all spending your time?
I'm in Dripping Springs, Texas, which is about 45 minutes west of Austin into Hill Country. We're out on a little family piece of land. Yeah, some would call it a farm, but I think you have to yield profits or endeavor to have some sort of livestock operation to call it a farm, which we don't. We have animals, we grow vegetables, but it's all for pleasure. So we're on some land out here in Texas, just trying to keep the chickens alive.
I think Mark can get you a good deal on a used American Eagle. You might want to talk to him about that after.
That's highly illegal, actually. And if Mark, and he'll tell you.
It's in good condition, though.
It is.
It's a federal offense. It's actually, It's actually a federal offense to even take the carcass of an eagle or even a red-tailed hawk, any of the endangered predator bird species. And I did illegally once, and it's been over 10 years since I've done it, so they can't come after me. And they
statute of limitations. Yeah,
so what do you call statute of limitations? That's
right. Did you say rental hawk?
We were actually...
Did you say a rental hawk?
Yeah, a rental hawk?
No, I don't know. No, no, we've got, but I did find a red-tailed hawk once, and we did save the red-tail. Rental hawks are, you might as well, if you're just going to rent a hawk, you might as well just buy one. I'd appreciate it greatly. I'm broadcasting, Chris, from, I'm broadcasting with the worst service of Tucson, Arizona, and it's actually the cattle ranch where I grew up. So my wife and I spent the first 30 days in isolation. We were actually in Europe, in Switzerland. We were getting ready to go on tour. Midland was getting ready to go on our second European tour in as many as 3 months. That was canceled. And then we came back and did quarantine in Austin. And we have we live right in like just off South Congress. I'm sure you're familiar with Austin.
Sure.
Just out of downtown. Luckily, we're on the green belt, so we're able to kind of like go hiking and get outside and stuff. But we have a pretty small little house, and we had nobody. I have a 4.5-month-old baby, and we had been, I think, on day 30 without any kind of assistance for the child. And my wife and I looked at each other, and we said, if we don't jump in the car and drive out to the family ranch. So we drove out here to get a little bit of with the baby and you know, just it's really nice, to be honest with you. And I don't mean this to kind of rub noses with everybody that's in the city, but man, getting to spend some time out in nature and having some fresh air and some quiet, it has been very settling to kind of go through this out here.
I think when this whole thing winds down, there's going to be a lot of new babies on the way, and there's going to be a lot of forces. It's going to be a little bit of both, or a lot of both.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you say rental hawk?
So I'm pretty close to Cam. I'm in Driftwood, Texas. If you went in a straight line, I think I'm probably 2 miles from Cam. We've got some acreage out here. Yeah. It's like 45 minutes outside of Austin. It's beautiful. It looks like it might storm today. It's we've got live oak trees out here, so it stays green year round, which is like, you know, kind of the main attraction of this area to me. But yeah, it's a beautiful place to be, beautiful place to hide out.
Are any of you guys, did any of you guys grow up in Texas? Are any of y'all like Texas natives?
No, I'm from Oregon.
But you're based there now, and you've been there for a while, right?
Yeah, we came out here kind of, well, Mark and I arrived at the same time, just preceded us by a couple of years, but the bands formed here in Dripping Springs something like 5 or 6 years ago. And so while none of us are from Texas naturally, the band was born here and really came together what's that?
You hear that thunder?
Yeah. It seems like it's north of us, though. I'm hoping it kind of swings out of the way. So the band is a Texas band. We're all from the West. I'm from California, just from Oregon. Mark's from Arizona. And we played in different iterations of Midland with different lineups for about a decade before pulling up stakes and moving out east or to the middle of Texas, rather.
Why did you go to Texas instead of Nashville?
I came out here, I guess probably 8 or 9 years ago or something like that. Really out of an interest of the stuff that was coming out of Texas, you know, Willie Nelson and the outlaw kind of stuff, was like a really big influence on the beginning of this band, that 70s, 80s, you know, Guy Clark and Jerry Jeff Walker and all these guys, kind of like Luckenbach kind of scene that was going on. And that was a little more appealing. And to be quite honest, you know, we started this band, we didn't think that we were going to be really accepted by Nashville or accepted by radio. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I think we kind of thought in the beginning that we were going to be, you know, a honky tonk band in Texas. And then over the years, you know, we've spent more and more time in Nashville and really been embraced by Nashville, which is great because that's your window to the world, you know.
Sure.
You know, and it allows you to go play in Europe, and it allows you to go play anywhere in America and have an audience because of radio. So we get the best, we kind of lucked out and got the best of both worlds in a lot of ways, you know, being able to be in Texas, but also kind of come through Nashville as well.
Well, it's interesting, you know, what you talked about, like being like a, you know, like a dance hall band or whatever, like there's that tradition that I'm a little, I'm always fascinated by the Texas tradition. Like there's sort of an insular music scene that exists there that you just don't, it just doesn't exist anywhere else. So now that you've lived in Texas for a while and you have a perspective on that, and I don't want to offend any Texans, but, and I like Texas a lot. I think Texas is awesome, but why are Texans so stoked to be Texans?
Dude. It's a great question. I was just having this conversation with a buddy an hour ago. It's just the Texas pride thing that is inherent to this state that isn't anywhere else. And it's weird. I was telling my buddy, like, you would think that California would have the same, if not more, California pride, right? Because they've got seemingly everything, right? It's like the land of milk and honey, like the mountains, the desert, the beach, the wine country, Big Sur, right? Like just all
it's,
the
it's interesting because I feel like California does have a similar thing, but it's more singular. It's like, I'm from fucking California and I'm the best, instead of like, we're the best, we're from Texas, you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
Plus also you've got different factions in California, like Northern California and Southern California,
right?
Texas is just a head and shoulders above as far as their pride goes for their state, in almost like its own country. And I have a feeling it was born historically out of its isolation and it being so far out into wild country, like Comanche country, that people had to band together and to survive.
Right.
And I think that kind of just permeated culturally through the generations. That's one idea. The other is that, like, it just really is a magical place and there's nothing to not be proud of out here. Sure, there's ignorance, but you can find that in any state. I promise you, we've been to them all, as you have. There's so much natural beauty out here and like just big personalities,
right,
in its people. And a real pride in their culture, right? And music is one of the things that you see that really embodied in, is a very specific style of country music. And then even in freak out rock, like Butthole Surfers and different iterations of country music, Lucinda Williams and, you know, Dale Watson and, like Jess was bringing up, all those other guys that like kind of just did their own thing. And I think you just see a lot of time to cultivate your own thing because of the pace of life out here. It's just different than you would have in Nashville because things are very business oriented and fast paced like any other commercial entertainment city, you know? So I don't know. Those are just observations. I don't know if there's a right answer, but that's kind of what I took away from living here. I love it.
Since you guys have been down there, have you gotten to interact with any of like the legends of the Texas sort of singer-songwriter world, like some of the folks that you mentioned?
Yeah. I mean, we got to play shows with Willie Nelson. That was pretty early on. Gary P. Nunn lives right around here. London Homesick Blues, he wrote that song. We've gotten to meet and play with a lot of people. That's something that's been important to us. And, you know, in these times, you know, where we're losing people, you know, like John Prine and Joe Diffie and stuff.
Yeah.
It's always been very important to us to get to meet our heroes and stuff like that. We got to meet John Prine, you know, very briefly. And that means a lot just to have gotten to meet him, you know, really, really quick.
Sure.
Obviously not from Texas, but it's always been something that we've set out to do, you know, to get to play with people like Willie Nelson and also not, you know, Texan, but Dwight Yoakam was another guy who gave us, you know, some of our first like tours and stuff, you know, support tours.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I saw you guys did that live album from the Palomino, which I was blown away. Like, I was like, I didn't even know the Palomino. I didn't know that building was still there, you know?
It resembles absolutely nothing of the original Palomino, which is such a shame. And I think just to circle back to finish that point, I think you're asking kind of why we chose Texas and what makes Texas special is that the live tradition of dance halls and bars with live music is something that the Texans kind of have built their culture around and they continue to protect. And unfortunately in California, a lot of that tradition I think has dissipated and kind of lost the war of development and whatnot. You know, you have in Austin, you have a place called the Broken Spoke where all of the greats from Waylon to Willie to Merle to George Strait all got kind of their starts and used to and still play there. The White family have owned it there since I think the late 50s, early 60s. And, you know, Austin is just like every other city, developments are always happening and it's been a boom town. But Willie Nelson came in and saved the Broken Spoke from development and sitting on a piece of property, the White family could have sold that for development and they could have cashed out and, you know, their kids probably wouldn't have to work that kind of thing and their grandkids, but they fought kind of like, you know, like the Texans at the Alamo to preserve that. And there is that sense of pride and preservation that exists in Texas. And I think if I could finger the thing that kind of makes the music scene so special there and what attracted us to that is that reverence for the live dance hall and the live music experience.
Yeah, you know, it's really sad as a West Coaster. I'm just at the age where when I was young and first going to shows, you know, a lot of those old honky tonks were still around, but they weren't country music venues a lot of the time anymore. They were, you know, having heavy metal shows and punk rock shows. And that was like the stuff that I would go see at the Foothill or the Palomino and things like that. And it breaks my heart that like in Bakersfield, which is such an important, like, you know, it's like the heart and soul of a certain era, you know, the Bakersfield sound and all that West Coast country, and all those venues are gone, man. There's nothing there anymore. I mean, you have the, you know, the venue that Buck built, but really that's like a kind of like modern museum. It's not like one of the old, it's not the Blackboard or whatever. And so they're all gone.
No, it was, you know, built in the late 80s. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Crystal Palace there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a shame. And, you know, the Palomino, if somebody had the foresight, you know, that would be, to this day, if the Palomino it had existed and you think somebody could have put some money to preserve that, I mean, that would be a mecca because, like you said, there's not really any of those spots that exist. And now you have, like, Pioneer Town, you know, which is kind of has been really a magnet for interesting artists and that kind of tradition. So it seems like they're kind of starting from fresh because there is that thirst and that hunger. And when Justin Cam and I were all playing in LA, I mean, you know how it is too. Like if you're a novice or a young artist trying to come up, it's that environment is, it's arid. You know, it's not a fertile ground to go out and be able to make your living as an artist and to have captive audiences and actually be able to garner some sort of wage to at least pay your band.
Yeah, I think Tom Petty famously said, if you're going to try and start a band, don't come to LA, you know, like you have to have your band properly in place. But if you go to LA, starting something there is a very difficult endeavor because of its, you said it earlier, dude, you know, very singular folks, people are out for themselves. It's a rat race, right? Like it's hard to get above, you know, and that's not a knock. That's just the environment. That's the culture there. That's all it is. It's a lot of transplants out there. In LA specifically, but where, so you started in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
And what, were you in the cowpunk scene? Like what was your earliest bands?
Early bands, I mean, you know, I grew up listening to like hard rock, heavy metal type music. And then at a certain point got like in like middle of junior high, got like obsessed with glam rock. You know, this would have been like around like 84, bands like Hanoi Rocks. And all of a sudden there was like an explosion of all that in LA.
Yeah.
With like Guns N' Roses and Jet Boy and Fast Pussycat and all that stuff. So that was like my scene, but it was like such a common thing. Like it, where I grew up was just far enough away from LA. It was like an hour and a half away that like there was no glam rock scene in LA. So if you wanted to go see live music, it was always a heavy metal band, speed metal band, thrash metal, punk rock. It was something like that. That's just what was around. And so you just wound up, you know, it is in high school, you just wound up playing with your friends. And I was always like the token long haired kid in the punk rock band, you know, which is kind of was my exposure to that. But like, so, you know, it was like a good mix, you know, cause all that stuff, it's like you got, there's so much great music just kind of in the air at that time that I feel like I soaked a lot of it up, even if I didn't like own a lot of the records. You know, you couldn't escape bands like X and the Blasters and stuff like that. That was sort of the punk rock stuff that was incorporating some roots, you know. And I, in a weird way, that stuff was like a huge influence on me, even though it wasn't exactly what I was into, you know.
The things you were playing, right? Yeah, exposure is everything. That I feel like Austin is like that. There's so much music in the air out here. Specifically, if we're talking about Texas, like Austin is really like, that's the Mecca. Like that's the place we came here because everybody is fucking good at music, you know?
Right.
Everybody. Like the guy who helps me with my landscaping is the best guitar player in town. You know what I mean? Like no shit. And that is very inspiring when you surround yourself with greatness. And yeah, it's competitive for sure, but there's all, if you're good, you got nothing to worry about. People out here respect talent. And so with that, you also get a lot of collaborative efforts and people coming together to put on shows and do side projects and write together and all that stuff. And that's really cool being out here in Austin, because I grew up in California and that isn't a thing. Really, like, hey, come over, you're in one band and I'm in my band. You never talk about getting together and writing music. Like, that's off the table, bro.
Or jamming. Jamming. No, jamming was illegal when I was a kid. It was like anything that reeked of hippie was like, no thanks, bro. it's a bummer.
Have you seen Once We Were Brothers yet?
I don't think so.
So Robbie Robertson wrote a memoir a couple of years back, and they just produced a documentary about the memoir.
Right.
And it's interesting because wherever you fall on the spectrum of who you side with, whether it be Levon or Robbie, there's a segment in there where Clapton, you know, basically dropped everything destroyed Cream, stopped playing with Cream the minute the first album Music from the Big Pink came out, and went to Woodstock to find them and showed up and was like, hey, do you guys want to jam? And they were like, we don't fucking jam, dude. We write songs and we play them. That's what we do. Right. You know, and that they were songwriters. They were songwriters first, especially in the very beginning when they were all writing music, which is why all that early stuff was so good coming out of them. And there's such a scene, man. Like Woodstock, that era. So you have to find these hotspots that come in and out of importance throughout history. LA, I don't feel like is having one right now. Austin is again. Nashville on the east side is having a thing. There's pockets around the country that are having little communities that pop up, but I don't see LA coalescing right now in anything in rock and roll or country. You know, I know that there's people out there doing it, and I'm not saying that they're not good. It just doesn't seem to be a movement.
Yeah, it's really something, you know, like I'm old and married and I'm not like part of any scene anywhere, but it kind of breaks my heart because it wasn't that long ago. Like when I was a kid and when I was coming down to shows in LA, all we went to go see were bands that didn't have record deals, bands that didn't have records out. You would like maybe you'd somehow get a cassette copy of their demo or something, and all those bands were selling out all the clubs. It was like thriving. Yeah. You know, it's just not like that anymore. You know, I mean, there's probably a lot of things we can point the blame at, technology and whatever, and gentrification, who knows, whatever. But
deep hole.
But yeah, it's like, you know, it's a shame because it used to be really vibrant.
I'm out to Texas, man. People just go to see music out here. That's what Mark was saying. It's true. It's so true. Like just throw a rock. There's a concert going on and there's a ton of people in there. And you got to be good because they'll talk shit to you out here in Texas. They'll just tell you flat out that you suck.
Well, yeah. when my kids go off to college, I'm going to pack a rucksack and come crash at your pad for a while.
Come on, man.
Put some time in out there. Hey, you know, I wanted to ask you guys, I mean, you talked a little bit about, you know, sort of before Midland or the, you know, you guys playing in different things leading up to Midland becoming a band. But once you guys did sort of, you know, your lineup got figured out or whatever, and you got a record deal. You came out of the gate strong, like with success. You know, like I don't know if it was. It always seems like right away when you're not in it. But I guess my question is, what's that pressure like for a young band when you do come out of the gate flying? When like fuck, you're like fuck. This worked. You know, we put out it was a hit. You know, now what?
Well, I don't think it was. You know, when you talk about right out of the gate. Jeff Cam and I have been, like I said, we were talking about, you know, we all started playing in bands together in the mid-2000s in LA. And, you know, we all used to share rehearsal space over on Santa Monica and the kind of the east side. What was the street, guys? It was Santa Monica and what? Next to Gold Digger Strip Club?
Near it was east of Highland.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we all just, we tinkered in different lineups and struggled and just really didn't get anywhere. And when this band came together, there was such a joy in just having a project that functioned and worked. And, you know, I think part of that magic was having the three of us, and you kind of finally had you had some sort of a structure, and you had a democracy in place so you could kind of move through, you know, creative tensions and different visions. So, but by the time we had success, you know, you're talking about 10, 15 years of playing in bands and projects. And again, by the time 2017 rolled around, we had been in the Texas scene and working with regional bookers and doing the Texas dance hall scene and working our way up that ladder, you know, and had been doing it for a long time and building that act. So once we started getting the success, it just meant we had more resources to, I think, to kind of execute this vision that we kind of all shared when we started this band. So I still, and maybe I'm just talking out of my ass, which Jess and Cameron are very proficient and intelligent. I'm just a great bullshitter, just. But I just think that the pressure really, I don't think has ever come in. Because I think after struggling for so long, the fact that it's like working and we're able to make a living, and we really do enjoy the
the creative collaboration between the three of us. I think it's just kind of, there's a lot of joy involved in it. I'm not going to say that there's not stresses and life on the road and the kind of touring schedule that we've maintained for the last 4 or 5 years is enough to, you know, take them to, and definitely aid you. But I think that there's not a pressure per se in the music. There really is just, it's just kind of time limits, and maybe Jess and Cameron have a different viewpoint, but I don't really feel the pressure. It's almost just like,
oh, I feel
where
the
we find
way.
The time to get it going and record these songs.
I think people like to create
this conversation today.
Yeah, there's always going to be external factors that create pressure, that maybe people around you feel pressure, but we try and. I don't know, man. I guess I'd have to imagine a world where we don't have a catalog of music that we're constantly adding to. And maybe then you would feel some sense of fear. But we have so much material that, in more than anything, I feel like anxiety, that we don't have enough time to put out material. You know, that is more than anything. But that's also because I think inherently this band wasn't predicated on fill in the blank, anything besides create the best song and have the most fun, you know? And so if you start something from there, as long as you stay right around that road, you're always going to be on the right side of stress, most likely.
Right.
And that's like what, you know, both Cam and Mark are saying, like kind of being like a 10-year overnight success. And going into our first record with really like probably 3 albums worth of songs that we loved.
No shit.
And then going into the second record, you know, with like even more, and it's more about like, well, how do you make the decision to leave this song off is more of the decision when it comes to making records. And we love the creation process. You know, as long as we get to do that, you know, it's just, that's an integral part for all of us. We love doing that. And I don't personally feel like I relate to what Cam is saying. Like, I don't really feel pressure. I feel more like anxiety about, like, I was actually thinking last night, like, as a songwriter, you're kind of like a blueprint plan drawer, and you can draw like the blueprint for the world's greatest building, but if it doesn't get built and people don't like see it, then it doesn't mean anything. And so there's probably more anxiety around having material that you're not sure if you can get out, being beholden to the timeline of a major label. You know, if we were an indie act, you know, we could release mixtapes and we could just be light on our feet, you know what I mean, and kind of do whatever we wanted. But we did have success, you know, and I'm not complaining about that, the success we say in the beginning. Like, I don't know if I can speak for Mark and Cam, but like I really didn't think that we were going to be, I didn't think that we were going to have a number one song. I definitely didn't think that. You know, I was like, if some kind of like, you know, college radio station is going to play like our single, that'll be really cool, you know? So a lot of it was like surprise, you know? And I guess the pressure does come from like, oh, you had a number one single, like your first time out. So now you've got a radio team that wants you to deliver hits, you know, that
right.
Are like that song, you know? It's a whole crazy game. Like, I mean, what's it like in rock? Like, we're so insulated here, you know what I mean? Like, do you guys have that same kind of thing?
I mean, yeah, kind of. It's interesting because, you know, over the years, like when I look back on like where the Foo Fighters were commercially, as far as like selling tickets and all that sort of thing. When I joined the band, you know, it's just been like a steady growth through the years, but it's certainly not like it's none of it's an accident. You know, it's like a lot of hard work, a lot of planning by our team. You know, it's a lot of things happening at the, you know, a little bit of luck and a lot of hard work, you know, just like anybody else. But sure. I mean, I think it might be a little bit different in rock music, because there just aren't like a lot of avenues like there used to be, you know, like so much like rock radio is all kind of died out and stuff. So I feel like that's, people always say to us like, oh, you guys are like the last rock band or whatever. It's like, well, yeah, all the pathway for young bands to become a big rock band is like shrunk a lot. So it's so sad.
Something that we pontificate on often, because we listen to so many different types of music, all of us. And I think between the three of us, there's probably very few bands that you could throw out that we haven't like fully dissected and dug into. Cause right. Like any music nerd, we all love that, right? Like that's what I'll stay up till 3 AM listening to some thing that I haven't heard and geeking out. Not the point. The point is, the point is that rock and roll has come so far and is in such a sad spot right now. And it's all symptom of making music on computers and not with guitars anymore. And they're just being less garage bands being made. You know what I mean? And
I always say rock and roll is thriving, but it's just called Americana now.
Yeah, but I think Americana is, there's so much of it, honestly. It's such a blanket statement. Yeah, and I think you're right, I think more or less. But I also think a lot of that music is pussy shit, dude. I'm sorry, I don't know how else to say it. But it's just not good.
It's a scene that can get a little mopey. I will say that.
Dude, I love getting, I'm fine with being mopey, but like, I just, it's all starting to sound very homogenized and boring. But I digress. Rock and roll is like, hip hop is the new rock and roll, you know?
Right.
I think that that's really cool, because there's a lot of young, talented kids out there who are in that world that are now having success and opportunity with hip hop. Yeah. And it's just not that way for rock and roll anymore. There's no programming for rock. Dude, Live 105, K-Rock, KRRQ 106.7.
Yeah.
Indy 103.
Like that's not, you know, I'm talking about before like that, like in the 90s, the big stations in California.
Oh yeah. Like, there used to be one in every town, you know? Yeah. It's not like that anymore.
And that's it's over, you know. I don't know when it will come back or if it will ever come back, because the way that we make music now, you know. Who knows what the fuck COVID-19 is going to do to getting people together in a fucking small space and making music.
That's the big question that nobody knows. I imagine you guys probably had like a year of touring that you were about to, you know,
we're on a hiatus from it, but what we were talking about, I think it's a dangerous bands that maybe kind of come and go, and they have these meteoric rises where they're chasing after like radio success or radio singles, as opposed to,
did you say Red Bull Hawk?
Making the music.
You cut out for like 30 seconds.
It makes him appear extremely thoughtful.
I think there's something that is, I'm trying to shut the fuck up because I have no idea how much of this stuff is coming through, but I did have a point when we were talking about like the pressures and whatnot. Is any of this coming
through? Bits and pieces.
You guys hear me?
A little bit.
We were talking about
I've just got genre is hip hop, right? But the people that are still just, they've stopped. Yes, a lot of that has been 97, stuff like that. But when you're quality, people like, I listen to your Jonathan Wilson podcast. I'm such a huge fan of Jonathan Wilson.
Sure.
The producing that he's done.
you talk about, you know, Father John Misty, you look at the war on drugs, you see Tame Impala, and you see people that have chased their own vision, and they're really chasing the music that scratches that itch, that they're just exploring, and you can tell it. And that quality, whatever it is, because you can't really finger Tame Impala and say Tame Impala and War on Drugs really belong on the same radio station in a way.
Right.
It's less, so much less formulaic as opposed to like hip hop these days. Like, man, to me, it all sounds the same. And I think that you're gonna start seeing people are gonna get bored of that, and they're gonna kind of start cutting through that because it really is cookie cutter. And I think that's what happened with rock and roll. I think everybody was chasing this singular thing because they were chasing the money was so big. People would, if you had one single back in the 90s, you know, fuck it, Jesus, you'd make so much money in record sales that you didn't have to really worry about chasing something that was quality. And by nature now, it's all about touring. So if you make great music, I think that's what's cool about it. Fuck the radio success and all that stuff. If you make great music, you know, look at Dawes, look what they've done. You know, yeah, they've been able to do that. And we came up, we used to go to all the Dawes shows and used to kick around with those guys. And, sure, you know, they haven't per se had like those radio smashes, but, you know, they make a great living.
Yeah.
And they make the music that compels them. And they're able, they're not. And I think that's what Jeff and Cam and I are like, we're kind of always balancing one foot in this radio game because you want to expose your music. And the more exposure you can get, of course, the shows grow, and then you're able to kind of create that pad where you are able to kind of get more experimental and chase that live audience. I don't know if any of that came through.
Yeah, no, I got it. I got it. Hey, I will tell you guys, my battery is about to die on my laptop, so I'm gonna let you guys go and get back to the important lockdown business of watching lots of porn. And yeah, making your handmade Don't Mess with Texas coffee mugs that I'm sure you've all, you got to get in the kiln soon.
Hey, let's face it, maybe we did something productive. It's time to have a drink.
No. There you go. We worked. Hey, we worked today.
I just want to close by saying there's a basic balance sheet that can be applied to renting a hawk, you know, based on if you're doing it hourly or by the day.
I was waiting for the fucking perfect ending, dude.
I personally rented mine for the whole year and I got a really good price. All right, that was Mark, Jess, and Cam from the band Midland. They were great. I'm gonna put up some links over on walkingthefloor.com so you can find them and see what they're up to, even though, truth be told, they're doing the same thing that you and I are doing. They're sitting around at home every day, picking their butt, waiting for the lockdown to end. But I'm going to put the links up anyway. Okay, I've been doing so many of these interviews recently that I might have to up the schedule and start putting them up every week. So I'll either be back in a week or back in 2 weeks. I don't know. We'll see. We'll just see how it goes, man. I got a lot of live streams coming up next week, so maybe it'll be 2 weeks. I don't know. We'll see. That's it, boys and girls. We'll see you soon. Adios, amigos. Get to singing along. Something silk in 1973. She's lying with him and she's lying.